Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and this is episode 104, Holiday Gift Guide 2013. Today I am joined by a very special guest, not least of which being that he is the head honcho over at Troll in the Corner, but also because he always has a lot of great ideas for gifts for geeks like you and me. So I am delighted to welcome the one, the only, the newly shaved Ben Gerber.
Hey, Jonathan, how's it going?
It's good. How are you?
Good. It's really, really awesome to hear you say episode 104, because I'm on episode 35, so I guess I got a little bit of catching up to do to you here.
Well, do you know what? You're going to get there faster than I am, because it's only taken me, what is it, 7 or 8 years to get to that point?
Well, I'm a year and a half at 35, so I don't know. I might be tooling along at about the same rate. Maybe a little quicker over the next couple of months. We'll see.
I don't know. 35 is pretty impressive. They say that if you manage to get to 10 episodes, chances are you're going to be sticking around for a while. And you definitely have quite a few really interesting episodes out there for your show, Indie Talks.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing, but I heard it was 34 episodes. So I guess I'm just over the cusp now with number 35. But we got number 36 coming up in a week, maybe a little bit less than a week. That's going to be a fun one. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
You and I had talked for my other show, Geeks Explicitly, way back in a February 2013 episode to talk about Valentine's gift ideas for the geek in your life. And every year I do this holiday gift guide for Wargaming Recon, and it's kind of become this tradition. So I was thinking about, I need to do it, and I got to come up with stuff for it. But wouldn't it be cool if I had someone come on? And you were the first person who came to mind, because it's just so much fun doing the Valentine's one that doing one for the winter holidays, whatever they happen to be, Wintervale, Christmas, Hanukkah, Chrismukka, or, you know, whatever you happen to celebrate or not celebrate, that it would flow really well. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like doing these things. And hopefully I have a couple of items that'll be a little bit surprising. Probably not, because I'm a geek and I'm a gamer. So we'll see. I haven't told you what I picked yet. So
no, and you have no idea what I'm going to have. But I think this is neat, because we're going to approach this from different aspects, but it should still be really interesting for listeners. Of course, my items are going to be mostly geared more towards the wargaming and historical gaming side, and I'm presuming that yours will be more from a mainstream sort of gaming and something that will appeal to those who like to listen for New England gaming kind of stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, you're just going to have to wait and find out.
So for listeners who've never listened to a holiday gift guide episode, the setup is the same as it was in 2012. We have three categories, under $20, under $50, and $100 and above. And in each category, we have three items per category. So I have three that are in the under 20, three that are under 50, sort of, and three that are 100 and above.
I may have added a couple of zeros to that. I thought it was 2,000, 5,000, and 10,000. No, well, I'm just kidding.
You know what? If you want to buy some listeners, some many wonderful games of 5,000, I'm sure no one will say no to that, Ben. Because I can just give you my mailing address, and you can just send me $2,000 worth of games. I would love that.
You're making a joke, but I got about $300 worth of games sitting here waiting for you to come pick them up. So
you do. That's one of the great things about the Extra Life 25-hour Gamerthon, that you've had a lot of great connections with companies over the years who were very supportive this time around for that. So a huge thank you to all of them. And I know that's not really related to the gift guide, but just something to be really appreciative of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Ben, do you want to kick things off with your under $20 list?
Yeah, I'm going to start my list off. I have, like you said, three items for each category. And this first one is all about sparkly princesses and romance and relationships. and a mother who might have been possibly thrown in jail for treason, and all for about $10. And what I am talking about is AEG's Love Letter. Love Letter is a card game that you can play in 16 cards with the 20-ish or so little red cubes, and it sounds like the kind of game that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. You're trying to get your love letters to the princess's attention, and the person who can get her attention the most wins the game, wins her affection. But really what it is it's a card counting and deductive logic game that takes, maybe 15 to 20 minutes to play. You've got a total of 16 cards. Your hand is always one card in size. You draw a card, you play a card, play super fast. I'm not joking when I say I could play this game all night and not get sick of it. It is probably the best gaming investment I think I've ever made. And there are two different editions of it. There's a standard AEG edition, which comes in a little cheesy, velvety red bag that looks like a Crown Royale knockoff kind of thing. And then there's the other one that I don't have yet that I'm lusting after, which is also $10 on Amazon. And it is the Kanai Factory Edition. The gentleman who originally designed this is Japanese, and he originally made it with some really cool, almost kabuki theater style artwork. So either one, whichever style you're going after, that one comes in a box, a little velvety bag. $10 makes an awesome, awesome geeky gift. And if you enjoy playing games, get it for the person you're going to be playing with, because this game rocks. It is, seriously, you're not going to find a better game for $10.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because most games, even entry level or party type games, mm-hmm. spending way more than $10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually the game that inspired me to try and design some smaller games as well. And it's kind of kicked off a little revolution in games that probably cost manufacturers $6 to produce, that are selling, you know, retailing for $11.99 and doing quite well. So keep an eye out for it. You can get it on Amazon. You can find it in your friendly local game stores. I'm sure you can get it just about anywhere else that sells games. Awesome, awesome thing. If you're going to jump on the special factory edition there, do it soon, because it's a limited edition print run, and my feeling is that by the time the holidays are over, you probably won't be able to find it. I could be wrong, but that's the feeling that I'm getting.
Well, something like this is perfect. A lot of people at work, they do Yankee swaps or, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. And I don't know about you, but any place that I've ever worked that's done something like that, the cutoff is usually like $10 or $15.
Yeah.
And something entry level and kind of just very accessible it's perfect for that.
Yeah. Yep. The manual for the game is about the size of a playing card. It's maybe 10 pages long. Half of it is fluff text. Super easy to play. You play a series of rounds and hands to finish off the game. By the time you're in your second hand, you'll understand the game completely, but you won't be all that good at it until you play for a while. And it's for 2 to 4 players. Awesome, awesome game. Love Letter. Go out and get it.
Okay.
Now
what? Okay, guys, I gotta go. Ben wants me to go buy this game. I gotta stop recording right now, and I'll be back in, you know, however long it takes me to. No. The first item on my list here for under 20, it beats yours in price, but it might not seem like something you would see in a gaming gift guide off the top of your head. It costs $4.99, and what it is felt. Something you can go and get at your local craft store or Joann Fabrics. It's $4.99 a yard for just craft quality felt. And the reason why this is on my list, and it's probably going to end up being my number one pick overall. Anyone who does any sort of tabletop gaming, and I don't care if you do sci-fi, you do fantasy, you do historical, you do whatever scale, size, or you're using tokens, it doesn't matter, or just plastic army men or something, you need to be able to convey a sense of terrain, what the table looks like, what your stuff is interacting with. And the easiest, and in my mind, therefore best, and also cheapest way, and also old school gaming type of way, is to just use different colored felt for different things. So you could buy a yard of blue, a yard of green, a yard of whatever, and then you spend a little bit of time cutting it to whatever shape you want and design. It ends up being that much cheaper than buying the smaller, special felt that you find in like a Michaels or an AC Moore that's intended for this sort of stuff. So if you go to a place that is selling cloth with the intention of people making their own pants or whatever, you can just get it so much cheaper. And I discovered this by accident one day because I was working on a special project to make an affordable game table. A buddy had some ideas on, and I was like, hey, the table's surface is plywood, and who wants to play on that? Because one, you're going to get stuck all the time, and two, it's plywood. It doesn't look like anything. Well, lo and behold, you figure out what size a table is and convert that into yards and go to Joann Fabrics, and I think I spent all of $15-$20 maybe. I had a coupon, and I got a 6x4 amount of green felt, and then I went back and got black for some space gaming, and I got blue for some sea gaming, and $4.99 a yard, people. You can't beat it.
I was going to ask, can you, I'm not having much experience with this, but having a real practical application that just popped into mind, probably because of what's sitting on the table behind you, I think. Can you get patterns, felt patterns? Like, do they have different patterns? Because if you can find some sort of star, field, spacey, nebula kind of thing, that would actually be pretty good if you can get a low, like a not very thick felt to lay on the table if you're going to play X-Wing, the miniatures game. Because it keeps the thing, I have a wooden table, a kitchen table, dining room table, and every time you touch one of the little X-Wing miniatures, it slides about a quarter of an inch, and that annoys the heck out of me. But playing on something like felt, even if you just do black, you know what I mean? That kind of gets you into the game and also stops the things from sliding all over the table.
Well, what I do is I just put my black... Actually, I have the black, blue, and green felt on the game table in order based on the frequency of type of game I play. So right now, black is on top, blue's on the bottom, green's in the middle, and I use black when playing, say, X-Wing or really any space game, Battlefleet Gothic or whatever it happens to be. But if you wanted to be really crafty, you could just get some white paint and put it on a paintbrush and put the felt far enough away from you, flick the paintbrush, and lo and behold, you got a painted starry scene on your black felt, and it's not going to cost you anything extra than some paint, which you could use for anything, really.
Nah, you've already gotten way ahead of me in work. That's way too much work.
It's something they do have. I have seen felt or some other type of fabric that has that sort of stuff on it.
But I'm sure it's out there.
If you wanted to just spend the $4.99 a yard for felt, you could easily just get that paintbrush. Because, of course, we are all creative, full of ingenuity people, right?
That's me.
You mean, mister, I'll spend 4 months working on a game, but I won't spend 10 minutes to fling some paint at a thing of felt?
I'm too busy working on games, so what can I say?
That's true. So that is my first item from my under $20 list.
So my turn. I get to go next, huh?
I suppose.
All right. Well, now we're going to get a little bit more into traditional gaming. And this is a game that I'm a big fan of Dungeon Delves when I was younger. And role-playing games were, well, not in their infancy, still sort of in the golden age of if you're a knight or a paladin and you have a horse, you use your horse to ride up to the next dungeon, you get off your horse, and then you go into the dungeon kind of thing. I like Dungeon Delves. And I like dungeon delving. The problem is you either have to do it in a role-playing game scenario where there's a couple hours of setup for the GM, you got to get everybody together at the same time, or you can find a good board game to do it with, which will run you $40 to $70, depending on which one you're picking up and if it happens to be on sale and all of that. Thank God, Tasty Minstrel Games finally came out with a low-cost solution for all of our dungeon delving needs. It's actually a game called Dungeon Roll, and it comes in this awesome little box. It's about... I don't have a good analogy around here. If you take a small toolbox and cut it into quarters, it's about a quarter of that size. There you go. There's a mental image for you.
Don't make me do math.
Yeah, it is actually shaped like a little treasure chest. And what it is it's a dungeon delving game. You go down through different levels and you have to assemble a party. You have to fight different types of monsters, and different party members are good at taking on different types of monsters, plus there's magic treasure, and you're going for experience points. This whole thing retails for about $18 on Amazon or through TMG's site. And while it's not a perfect game, it's a 2-4 player game again. If you're playing with 4 players, there may be 2-4 minutes of downtime for some of the players that aren't actively engaged. 2 players are engaged at any time. 1 person is doing the dungeon delving. The other person is rolling the dice for the bad guys, basically. But as a 2-player game, or if you're gaming with kids aged 7 to whatever, it's an awesome game. And for $18 for that awesome little dungeon treasure chest kind of thing and an entire dungeon delve in a box, you're not going to find something better than that to sort of satisfy that urge. The best thing is if you have set up something Descent Second Edition, or if you're going to play some sort of deck builder or something like that, or you got a big game like Twilight Imperium and you're going to go out to space, but not everybody's shown up yet, you only got three players there, break this thing out, you can play it in a half hour. You're done. Your fourth player shows up, you move on to the big game for the night. Or it's a great lunchtime game as well. It's small, it'll fit into a backpack, easy to carry around, and it looks freaking cool. So that's Dungeon Roll by TMG, Tasty Minstrel Games. $18, can't go wrong.
I love all these low-cost games you're piling out here. That's pretty awesome.
I'm really into inexpensive games right now. I think there's a real good potential for game developers and publishers to find fairly deep, fairly fun games that can be played in a half hour to 45 minutes that cost under $20. That's what I'm designing right now as well, because I'm kind of using it as my little game school to teach myself all the different mechanics so I can put it together in the bigger games in a year or three when I'm ready to do that. I'm into these small form factor little tiny games that can be brought out, played in an instant, very little setup, and then put away and onto the main fare for the night.
Something kind of related that I've seen online, and of course I can't recall exactly where, but you know, as a GM, that the difficulties involved in creating a dungeon. So let's say you're doing a traditional RPG or whatever, and you're like, oh, I need to map out this thing.
Yeah.
I've seen online dungeon dice.
Yes.
You roll them, and you can randomize that way, or you just pick, and it shows you the exact layout you need. Very affordable. They look awesome. Fit in your pocket. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of like those Roy story cubes, except instead of being a story, they're just a dungeon. It's all modular. Like you said, you roll them, you stick them together, and boom, you have an instant dungeon that your players are guaranteed to map wrong anyways. So,
my number two goes in it continues in the whole affordable method, but it goes in a different direction. So let's say you want to play some tabletop games. And people, when I first got into historical gaming, I was like, oh my God, there's so many choices, and I don't know where to begin. And you have scale, and you have manufacturers, and you got to pick what you want to do. Do I want to do World War II? Do I want to do Civil War or Napoleonic? Like, what the hell do I want to do? You're overwhelmed. And then you're trying to figure out, well, which is a good value and how much should I spend for this and that. And I came from playing a lot of sci-fi fantasy games where miniatures for that, for like five guys, you're spending $50.
Pricey.
So I was like, oh, well, people are saying such and such company is really expensive for historicals. And in my mind, they weren't because they were, say all of $20-$30 for like a ton of guys. But I actually came across something that's really cool. It's a company called Hat Industry, H-A-T. That alone makes it awesome because their website is hat.com.
Wow.
And what they do is they do all sorts of different types of plastic models, predominantly soft plastic, like the old Airfix and the stuff from the 60s and 70s. But they are really well known for their 1/72 scale models. You can buy a box of them, which is something like 25 to 50 models for $7.50.
That's not bad at all.
They cover just about any era, and I came across them because I've been looking for some really good ancient Roman models. Of course, I decided I was going to do the scale, and I was going to buy some of these models, and I bought some, and then it turned out they didn't have all of them in stock. So you really, really, really need to verify what's in stock before you're starting a new project, and don't do it the hard way like I did. But if you happen to say, I want to try the hat models or whatever, you can go on their website. They list everything that they have. They're really great about customer service. Just send them an email and find out. And a lot of really small history-focused game stores have stuff here near Boston, actually very close to Boston in Malden, is Hobby Bunker, and they carry quite a few of these. It's $7.50 for a box, like I said, about depending on what you're getting, but anywhere between like 25 to 50 guys, and that's a lot of stuff, and depending on how you're going to do it and how many models are going to represent how many men or whatever, you can spend very, very, very little money and get a lot of bang for your buck, and then you couple that with that felt that I was talking about, for $3.99 a yard, and you have an instant table. So the models, you actually have to clip them apart, and you can glue them together if you want. You don't have to. They are colored plastic when they're molded, So if you wanted to, you don't need to paint them. You could just really go old school and say, hey, look, these guys are tan and these guys are gray or whatever. And lo and behold, you can get your stuff going because the point is to play, right? The point is to play the games, whatever they are to make yourself happy. So you can go ahead and do that. Or if you really want to paint them, you can go ahead and do a whole painting thing.
And yeah, I mean, and historically in the Roman Empire, the tans and the grays were two empires that Rome fought. I believe they were in Transylvania and Greyhaven.
Exactly.
So you could do that historically.
I heard the Greys were really vicious fighters too.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you step on them in bare feet in the middle of the night. Oh man, that was you don't want to step on those little mobs.
Second only to Legos.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that I know well.
Yeah. Who hasn't done that? That's perhaps the worst thing in the world. I think stepping on like a nail is less painful than stepping on a Lego.
Okay, tangent time. I'm going to say there's an awesome game out there called Catan Jr., which is a little piratey kind of game that you can play with young kids. Love the game. Well worth getting. However, it comes with about 3 million little plastic pirate ships that are, I'm fairly sure, have monofilament edges. They're able to cut through steel, glass, and diamonds. Do not step on those, which I have done. That is the worst. Worse than Legos. Worse than little, 77 millimeter guys or whatever the scale is for the tans or the grays there. Okay, tangent over.
Just really, in general, beware of stepping on any sort of game piece.
Yeah, yeah, that's a bad idea.
Either you're going to hurt it or it will hurt you. I think there's no in-between there.
So am I up next? Do I have my last one? Excellent. I'm going to get a little meta with my last thing. Ooh. I'm going to talk about a movie about a bunch of people trying to play a game that also includes in-game footage. Not as in like watching the game being played, but the characters actually in the game. It is one of my all-time favorite geeky movies. It is the second in sort of a trilogy. There's a short film, and then there's this one, and then there's the third one. I've been pushing this movie since, I think, 2010 when it came out. I've talked to a bunch of folks who were involved with it. They're awesome, awesome people. They used to be known as the Dead Gentlemen. Now they're the Dead Gentlemen and Zombie Orpheus Entertainment. And the movie is Gamers Darkness Rising.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can get an HD download, DRM-free, from DriveThruRPG for $10. $10 it'll cost you, and throw it on whatever device you want. This movie is a near-pitch-perfect look at the world of role-playing games and the people that inhabit this world. Their real lives, how it interferes with gaming, the stereotypes that often go along with gaming, and anybody who's ever played in a role-playing game campaign knows that there are certain in-jokes that sort of happen among gamers, and they're all, in every single one of them, as I'm fairly certain, in this movie. It is not a high-budget movie, so don't expect amazing special effects, but the script, the timing, the acting is dead on, and you are not going to find a better movie about role-playing games than Gamers Darkness Rising. I have not seen Gamers Hands of Fate yet, which is the third one, which is also more about collectible card games. I hear that's amazing as well. But I will definitely, definitely say head over to DriveThruRPG, download this thing, or go to Amazon. It might even be streaming still on Netflix for free. And watch it. I actually convinced my wife to sit down and watch it with me. She was very skeptical. She ended up loving it so much that we've watched it several times since. It has every single thing that's awesome about gaming and all the nerdy stereotypes, but looked at not in the way that like the Big Bang Theory or something like that will look at them, but really from people who are obviously gamers themselves, and who know the hobby from the inside and are experienced at it, and are sort of poking it with a stick from our side of things, not from the other side of things. Cannot recommend this thing highly enough.
So what you're saying, Ben, is that anyone who really enjoyed the book of Dice and Men, or who really enjoyed the YouTube video, like a D6, should
yes.
go ahead and pick up this movie?
Yeah, if another good thing to pick up too, which is probably also $20, that you also might have read and enjoyed, is The Elfish Gene. Which is a take on, Richard Dawkins' A Selfish Gene, which is about growing up in the late 70s, early 80s in England and being a D&D outcast with your friends. The movie is awesome. I can't say enough good things about it. Check it out on Netflix. If you do like it, buy it because you're supporting the folks who make it. They are 100% fan-funded, which means that they do all their stuff through Kickstarter. They have a web series out called Journey Quest. Zombie Orpheus Entertainment has branched out into other shorter films and full-length series and whatnot. everything they do is 100% fan-funded, which means no advertising. They get to call all the shots, and they make awesome stuff. So go check it out.
So the third and final item on my under $20 list, I think you're going to see that there's a theme to my under $20 list, and perhaps a theme overall to my entire kind of list here. But the third and final item costs $10.99. You can run it up to 11 if it's easier to remember. And it is something that anyone who's ever had to run a tabletop event will know to be invaluable, and those that have not will soon learn the importance of it.
Cheap
and it
vodka.
Is, yeah, that too. You need to get the little hip flask in.
Yes.
It is Woodland Scenics Clump Foliage. Now, this stuff is fantastic. Anyone who's ever done Model Railroad and has seen any of like the Model Railroad stuff, and you look at it and you're like, how do they make this and how do they do that? Because model railroaders make the best terrain in the world. The worst model railroader makes better terrain than the best anyone else, as far as I'm concerned. So they use just about anything Woodland Scenics, which is a company that makes fantastic terrain-making stuff. And the clump foliage is really cool because what it is, it's small particles of stuff that they've clumped together. And you can get it in a variety of colors, but then you can use it to create things like bushes, shrubs, or the ever-important tree. You can create your own armature or buy an armature, put a little PVA or some sort of terrain-making cement on it, dip into the clump foliage and just kind of squish it together and just hold it there for a minute. And then once it sets, you're good to go. And if it falls off, oh no, you have more. $10.99 buys you the big canister. They actually call it a shaker because the theory is you could put a bunch of glue or some sort of adhesive onto a table, a gaming table, sprinkle this out on the table and just kind of push down, and then you get a whole surface. And you can use different colors to represent different seasons, or also if you wanted to just kind of delineate different types of material that's on the surface. So let's say you don't want to just use felt, or you don't want to use felt at all. You could use this to show things like fields and open meadows. You can use it to do hedgerow, so you could do bocage. You could do just about anything with clump foliage, and they have stuff specifically for grass. They have static grass. They have all of that sort of stuff. But you could use this by itself, and if you have to choose between something like static grass or flock or this, I say you go with this because you can do more with this. I'd like to see someone make a tree out of a bunch of flock.
Hmm. Now, are you negating your earlier, cheaper felt gift, or are these two complementary?
Well, I think you can use them either at the same time, or some people like to go more 3D in their view. And so, like, clump foliage tends to be, I hesitate to say because people are going to say, no, you're wrong, but it's maybe slightly more new school than felt, but not really. It's like saying something is newer by a day.
Gotcha.
Right, but cool, it could make the difference, because, like, if you're someone who's coming into a convention, say, and you're looking around and there's a table with a bunch of people huddled around and it has stuff sticking off it, 3D, and then another table is completely flat with felt, I think I know which table you're going to go to. But both are really useful tools to create an exciting and fun-filled experience.
Sure. And the felt, I mean, together, they're not terribly expensive. Either, it sounds like you can do a pretty decent surface and get some foliage going.
Yeah, I mean, you could do, like I said, how I have the felt to cover my game table, provides your surface, your foundation, and then you use the clump foliage to add the accents to it.
Excellent. Very good.
So that rounds out my under 20, which causes us to move up a tier into the under $50 level.
Ooh, we have unlocked the under $50 achievement.
I like to think of this level as the friends and family level.
Yes.
But not quite the people who you're married to or immediate family, maybe.
Right.
Like the under 20, I always think of maybe like acquaintances and coworkers sort of things, or, hey, I should get that person something because they were nice to me once and they got me something, but I don't really know what to get them. And the under 50, like, oh, I actually know and like you.
There you go. So my first thing is a toy in the geekiest sense of the word. It is something that probably nobody actually needs, but everybody seems to want. And it's $35. It's the Google Chromecast. You get it through the Play Store. You can get it on Amazon. You can probably get it at any local store that sells that kind of stuff. And what it is a little device with a USB plug and an HDMI plug. You stick it into your television. You get the app for it. And anything you're doing in, say, Google Chrome on your phone, your iPad, or whatnot, you flick it towards your television, and boom, it appears on your TV. So it works with all kinds of neat stuff. It works with Android, works with iOS, Windows, OS X, of course, the Chrome operating system if you happen to have a Chromebook. And what you can cast with it is Netflix, Hulu Plus, Pandora, YouTube, HBO Go, Google Play, movies, and TV, and just about anything you can actually watch in a web browser. So you're watching, I don't know, you're looking at, let's go with Gamers Darkness Rising on Netflix, and you're streaming it on your iPad, and you have a 53-inch television sitting on your wall. If you happen to have a Chromecast plugged into it, you flick it towards the television, and boom, you're watching it on your TV. Now, having said that, most of the people with a 50-inch television on their wall and a Netflix account probably have some way of already streaming it to their television, which is what makes this thing more of a toy. But it just seems kind of neat that you can do different things with it. You can browse the web using your phone or tablet as a keyboard on your television. If you have a web-enabled TV, you can do that as well, but you won't be using Chrome with all of your bookmarks and all that fun stuff, I don't believe, unless you have an Android-enabled TV. So it's not something that anybody needs, but goddammit, it's something I really want. And that's why I put it in my top three under $50 things. It's $35, which is right hovering around that impulse buy sort of thing. And I guarantee you give it to a geeky friend, even if they have a Roku box, a web-enabled TV, a Hulu Plus account, a Netflix account, an Xbox, a PlayStation, and a Wii, and all this stuff to get that stuff on their TV, they're going to be like, oh, this is cool, thank you. What else are you going to use to watch your stuff on your phone, on your television, without using that silly little HDMI, mini HDMI cable? So it looks pretty cool.
Well, I don't know about you, but when I have friends over, they often have their mobile devices with them, mm-hmm. Whether it's an actual mobile device or something like a MacBook Air or whatever. And they're like, hey, look, I found something cool. And we spend more time staring at our stupid devices than talking. So something like this would be perfect because even if, say, and we don't, but say we had a Netflix account, we got rid of it because we get all the stuff we need from our local library mm-hmm. where it doesn't cost us anything except for our taxes. But if people came over and if they had one, they can't really connect it into whatever. So it just something like this would make it easier for them to share. Yep. You know, the video of the funny cat or that last trip they took to Waterloo or whatever it is.
I'm going to have to go ahead and guess that they're probably going to have an app installed on their device of some kind and also a key to get onto your Chromecast. So I don't know how well it would work with folks coming over. I don't know. I don't have it, so I haven't had a chance to play around with it. I do know that everybody else who has it has been like, if this thing was $50, I never would have gotten it, but damn, for $35, I love it. So there you go.
I think what you're saying, Ben, is that you really hope some very nice listeners of Indie Talks go ahead and buy you one of these.
Yeah, if you go to Amazon.com and put in bgerber@gmail.com, you'll find my wish list. It's on there. Feel free to buy me 6 or 7 of them, and I'll give a bunch away. There we go.
So the first item on my list tops out the price bracket for here. And let's see, one of you who's looking right now as we record live on Google Plus on the Hangout, I'm going to show you the cover of the item. Whoa. It is a brand new, really fancy, special review copy book that I've received from the very, very kind people over at Battlefront Miniatures and War Games Illustrated. I have to give a huge shout-out to the editor of War Games Illustrated for the editor of UK and also the digital manager for Battlefront and the author, one of the authors actually, Mr. John Sutherland. And the reason why I'm giving these shout-outs is because I believe in being completely 110% above board so that you know that I didn't pay anything for this, but even though it didn't cost me a single dime, I think it is so fantastic that I would have spent the $50 on it to buy it. And the reason why I have it isn't just to talk about it here on this episode, but it's because on episode 105, Mr. John Sutherland and his wife Diane will be on to talk not only about the book, which is their newest, they are very prolific, but also because they're going to be talking about a special, special vacation that Wargamers can go on the island of Crete, their Wargames Holiday Center. Now, as awesome as that is not on my list. The book is called Mega War Games. It costs $50. It's by John Sutherland and company, put out by Wargames Illustrated, which is the arm of Battlefront Miniatures. Battlefront creates the very popular World War II and also now Vietnam miniatures game called Flames of War. Hmm. And Wargames Illustrated is their in-house magazine that they have. And Wargames Illustrated is known for, well, like the name says, really, it's Wargames Illustrated. And this book is very similar to that. And the reason why it's called Mega Wargames, anyone who's ever gone to, say, a convention, perhaps, has seen really big games and thought, oh, that looks so cool. They have like 40,000 whatever on the table, and it looks amazing, but I could never do that. Well, you can, and this book will tell you how, and it'll tell you how you can maybe do it with friends, how you could do it on your own. And the reason why it's really cool is, actually, there's many reasons, but the number one reason for me is that John Sutherland is involved with this because his Wargame Holiday Center, they do massive gaming there. He does Rorke's Drift, and I think the last time that he had told me, he has something, and I'm going to mess up the numbers, but he has something like between 8 and 10,000 models for the Zulu alone, and of course the British soldiers, nowhere near as many. But this book talks about a handful of different battles. It tells you how they played them, tells you how they made the map look, it tells you just about a little bit about everything and how you could go ahead and stage it on your own. And I think that's the key, because we all love to look at the eye candy and see, you know, whatever the new fancy product happens to be at whatever store. And we all love to look at the new gaming thing and, oh, shiny, right? But then we get home and we think, well, how the heck am I going to do whatever? How can I get that? Or how is, I guess, the operative word here. And this book helps you along the way. It guides you into the world of Mega Wargames. So it is the first in my under $50 category, Mega Wargames $50 by John Sutherland and company, put out by Wargames Illustrated.
Excellent. All right, well, moving on to my number two. There are two, I don't know how your audience, how familiar they are with the board gaming world, but board games tend to get divided into two very broad sort of gray area categories called Euro-style games and Ameritrash-style games. And to go way, way off into the, you know, the far spectrums of each, a Euro-style game is something like Agricola, where there's no luck. It's all planning and strategy and what you're doing. Or if there is luck, it's usually very, very small. It has to do with a single die roll or a draw of a couple of cards, and it can be mitigated by your strategy. On the other end of the spectrum, Ameritrash games would be something like Talisman, where there's a heck of a lot of luck, and you're rolling dice, but they tend to differ as well, because Euro games tend to traditionally have less of a theme, and Ameritrash games tend to be more themed and be more eye-popping. Well, I've always been a fan of the Ameritrash kind of stuff, and I haven't been getting into Euro-style games very much. I played Puerto Rico a long time ago. I fooled around with La Havre and Agricola. It's just not my kind of thing. That is until I stumbled upon a game called Lords of Waterdeep. And what Lords of Waterdeep is, and I believe it retails for, the MSRP is like $49.99. You can find it just about anywhere for under $50, usually closer to $40. You don't want to spend more than, I'd say, $45 on it, because you can find it cheaper online or somewhere else. But what it basically is they've taken a fairly basic Euro-style game where you have little cubes and you're placing them, and they have cards that you're drawing, and it takes place over 8 turns, and you have your meeples that you can place, and they've slapped a Dungeons & Dragons licensed theme over it, the Waterdeep theme. But not because of either of those aspects am I recommending this. I'm recommending it because it is such a good game. There's a heck of a lot of replayability. There are a few expansions out there that make it even broader and deeper, but it's simple enough that people who are not into hobby games, if you show them how to play after a turn or two, they'll get it, and they'll know how to do it. And the next thing you know, they're going to be playing this, what looks to be a fairly complex Euro-style game. It's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of replayability. You can probably play the entire game in an hour to an hour and a half with 3 to 4 players. You can play with as little as 2. I believe it scales all the way up to 5 players, maybe more with some of the expansions. So Lords of Waterdeep, a pretty decent, fairly light Euro-style game, but to folks who are not used to the hobby games and think of Risk or Monopoly as the be-all, end-all of board games, it'll blow their minds. And it's a lot of fun. So it's a game that you can buy, put on your shelf, and keep coming back to. And that's my second pick.
I think I've spotted a theme with your list, and I think the theme is accessibility.
For now, sure. We're gonna wander pretty far afield when we get over $100, because then I can go nuts. But yeah, right now we're talking about games that are fun or things that help you get things that you wouldn't normally have gotten where you're going. Those are, I guess, are my two items right now, and a movie.
So my second game is an item that I'm surprised you haven't mentioned yet as being on your list. I'm actually a little shocked that it hasn't been. I'm glad because I get to talk about it more than you, but you haven't said it at all, so I'm really surprised. So this costs $29.60. I think it's actually MSRP $29.99, but online $29.60. And it is the core set for the X-Wing miniatures game.
Ah, yes. I was going to leave that one up to you, being the miniature wargamer that you are.
So when you look at it, and you look at what the cost of the core game is, and the fact that you get three fighters, really, and that you get some other stuff, you get turning tokens and different things, and then you look at what it costs for an expansion pack of $15, I think it is, and $30, $29.99, really, for a larger ship, like the Falcon or a Lambda-class shuttle, and you realize you get the one model, it makes perfect sense to say, wait a sec, are you nuts? But then you got to realize that included in each of these are wonderful, wonderful things called pilot cards. And the pilot card it changes the ship. So you will get numerous pilot cards in your box that you happen to buy. And you'll have pilots who can fly X-Wings, pilots who can fly TIE Fighters, and so forth. And it takes that one model and it transforms it into 3, 4, or 5, depends on how many pilot cards you have. And no, you can't use it that many times at a single go unless you have multiple models, but it really changes the game up. So you can have, in the case of the core set, you get 2 TIE Fighters and 1 X-Wing, and you can play with that as is, and you can get numerous games out of that one set because it comes with different scenarios, and it comes with those different pilot cards, and also comes with other cards that allow you to give equipment to your ships. And the equipment cards, like the pilot cards, can be transferred to just about any other ship that you buy. The only restriction being if a certain ship doesn't have the weaponry on it. For example, you might have a weapon equipment card that allows you to put proton torpedoes on something. And if you're flying a fighter that didn't have proton torpedoes, can't do that. Or if you have a pilot who flies Y-Wings, you can't put them in an X-Wing, for example. But otherwise,
I don't think you can mix light and dark side either.
Well,
Empire and Rebellion, I think, are...
That's true, but mainly because if someone flies a TIE Fighter, they can't fly an X-Wing.
Right.
And if you had someone who had time bombs, I think, like on the Slave One, Alliance vessels don't have time bombs.
Yep.
So it comes with all that kind of stuff. And then this would go back, again, and you notice, in case I haven't hammered it hard enough yet, it goes back to some other items on the list earlier, like that felt.
Mm.
You get the felt. That felt is going to become key in my list, really. And something like X-Wing miniatures, $29.60, you can get 2 people to play. And what's even better, you can buy multiple sets because it's cheaper to do that than to buy the expansion packs, and eventually you'll need to buy the expansion pack for the TIE Fighter and for the X-Wing, because that's the only way, for example, with the X-Wing, to get Wedge Antilles,
right,
his pilot card, and he is the best pilot in the game. Not Luke Skywalker, oddly enough, despite the use of the Force and everything, but Wedge is the best for the X-Wing, and so you can get him that way. But you could split the core set with a friend, so that your friend could take all of, say, the stupid Rebels, and you get all the Galactic Imperium, because of course the Empire is great, and the Rebels are nothing but Rebel scum and nerfers. Hey. So you could split it up. So really, the cost gets halved for you. And that's just something that's really cool.
Yeah, I purposely didn't talk about this because I had a feeling you would, because you've been agitating about the game for a while now, and it sounds like you really enjoy it. In fact, I think I can see a box for one of the larger models behind you. That's what I was looking at before. But one of the things you got to keep in mind, too, is at first I thought the price point was really, really high. You know, I think it's, like you said, $30 for three models. But when you look at something like, Warcraft, when you look at Warhammer, rather, Warhammer blows this stuff out of the water price-wise, plus with the X-Wing stuff, they are beautiful little models. You don't have to paint them unless you want to customize them. They're good right out of the box. And it's such a fun game. Now, one of the things that listeners should be aware of with the core set, too, is that I'm going to stake my reputation as a deal finder and a gamer on this. Before the holidays are over, before they happen, while there's still time to get things shipped to your house before they happen, I'd be willing to bet that you'll be able to find the core set for under $23 on Amazon, possibly even cheaper at some place like Target. They have been known to show up at Target for $19. I've seen them on Amazon for as low as $19.99 when a big sale happens. So keep your eyes out on that. You can get two core sets for $40. That's six ships, all the dice you're going to need to play with another person. It really is a two-player game unless you want to go play teams. You're going to have a bigger, bigger setup that way. The game rocks. Where else are you going to be able to think strategically, use fairly simple mechanics to have a complex game with all the things you can add on to it, and play with freaking Star Wars toys? You know what I mean? It hits all of those things. A word of warning to your listeners, though, it is highly, highly addictive. And you will think to yourself, I have three TIE fighters. I have four TIE fighters now. I've got two bases, but I really need two more to make that six TIE fighter squadron with Darth Vader and the TIE Advance on the lead. If I could just get those two more, and then, I need to get the X-Wing because it does have Wedge. Oh, and then the new TIE Bomber is out, and the TIE Advance and the A-Wings are fat. The B-Wing is coming out, and I don't know if you've heard what their next set is going to be.
I do.
Yes.
I know the price points, too.
Yes, they're a little bit more expensive, and maybe you'll talk about them later, but they're not available yet.
Will they come out spring 2014?
Yes.
You were talking about the Gallifrey Yards Medium Transport, which is going to be retailing for $50.
Yep.
And the CR-90, the Carillion Corvette CR-90, is going to be retailing for $75. People probably best know that from the opening scenes of A New Hope, mm-hmm. when Princess Leia is being bombarded by Darth Vader's Destroyer.
And the transports, of course, are from the beginning of the second movie, Empire Strikes Back, when they're evacuating Hoth. That's what you see as they're firing the big ion cannon and those transports are going by. Now, the most important thing about these sets are there's a special X-Wing that comes with a transport, and that's the only way you're going to be able to get it. Do you know who the pilot is that comes with that X-Wing?
I can't say I do.
It's Porkins.
Ooh.
Yeah, the only place you're going to find Porkins, who sadly met his end at the end of the fourth or first movie, depending on how you look at it, is going to be with that set. Now, I'm guessing that those things are more scenario-based and less, pummel your enemy into submission-based, but man, do those things look awesome. They're pricey. But again, I was just in a friendly local game store in Cambridge a couple of weeks ago, and there is a Warhammer model in there that is half the size. You have to put it together and paint it, and it was twice as much. So keep things in perspective when you're thinking about Wargaming. Not Warhammer. Warhammer. I keep wanting to mix up Warhammer and Warcraft. They're not as terribly expensive as they would appear, and they are a hell of a lot of fun.
Should also mention they have a special set coming out called Imperial Aces,
mm-hmm.
which are the TIE Interceptors repainted for the Emperor's Royal Guard,
yep.
and also the very special TIE Interceptor Squadron with Baron Sunterfil.
Yes.
So that is going to be really cool. I should mention that shortly after this came out, there was a whole Star Trek set that mm-hmm. came out, and looking at that, it has a very similar mechanic.
It is the same. They licensed the combat mechanics.
What's different, though, is the models actually, it's a click base.
Yeah, hero click.
And this is not.
No.
And I find the click bases aren't as good, and the models for Star Trek don't look as nice. They're not painted as well. The sculpting's not as good.
What they're doing, basically, is they already own the models. They already own the molds for the hero click Star Trek stuff, so they're reusing them to make it using these flight path combat system models. So that's why. They didn't make custom molds to the level that and quality that Fantasy Flight tends to do.
Which is unfortunate because a game like X-Wing's been made before by Wizards of the Coast. It was Starship Battles.
Yep.
And I of course I have all of it because I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. But the stuff in that, it just, the gameplay wasn't as good. The models were kind of cool. The scale was just really bizarre. And the scare for FFG is a little off on things. And they did what they had to. But because it's an FFG product, you know that it's quality. And really, they could charge double or even triple, and I think they still would get the money for it.
Probably, but they're doing a good thing. The other thing I can say, too, last thing on the Star Wars bit, and then we have to move on, or at least I have to move on, is that you're getting a lot for your money, and these models really, really are spectacular, and the gameplay is excellent. I would quit out of this podcast and go over to your house and play it right now if I didn't have to get up at like 4 in the freaking morning. It is such a good game. You're going to get so much replayability out of this thing. You're going to love it.
I have to say I completely agree. I have every single model that's been in production so far.
Mm-hmm.
Numerous, I think, except for the TIE Interceptor, because I think that's a piece of crap. But otherwise...
Oh, I'm going to show you how good it is.
That's not going to stop me from getting the Imperial Aces set.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's painted different, so of course it's a different thing, and I have to have it, right?
Yeah, collectors beware.
Yeah, exactly.
You have been warned.
But you're right, but I could spend like 5 hours talking about this, and I won't, not this time.
So I'm going to move on to my third thing, which is sort of actually more than one thing. It's a series of things, and it has nothing to do with gaming whatsoever. But... if you don't own any of these, if you haven't seen them, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, get the damn things. My third thing between, you know, under 50 bucks is any season of The Walking Dead that you don't currently own. If you haven't seen the show, you can get the first and probably the second season for under 50 bucks together. So worth it. The show is so amazing. It is a little bit gory. But I convinced my wife to sit down and watch it. She's not a big fan of horror. She's not a big fan of zombies. She is absolutely hooked. The show itself is amazing. Writing is amazing. Well, you're tough. You're wrong. You're right about Star Wars. You're wrong about Walking Dead.
Walking Dead is overrated, and if it followed more closely and truly to the graphic novels, it would be a superb piece of art.
Kirkman
sadly, it is not.
Kirkman is duped happy people. With the graphic novels because he had to rush because he had no idea how long these things were going to last. So he's excited about the TV show because it gives him a chance to explore these characters in a way that he couldn't do when he thought he might only get 4 or 5 books out. And I'm not talking, you know, the omnibuses. I'm talking 4 or 5 35-page comic books out. And he actually has a new series coming out that's slated for 2015, which is going to look at the Walking Dead universe from a completely new set of characters, unrelated 100% as far as we know, to the current series. I think the show is amazing. I think the actors do an amazing job. I think there's a few moments in each season, like there are with many shows, 2 or 3 episodes where things maybe drag a little bit. Generally, that happens in the middle. But man, the beginnings and the endings of these things make it all worthwhile. Such a good show. That's my number 3.
That is such a disappointing number 3. Well, hopefully mine won't be disappointing, except for the fact that it's not really completely under $50, but it's not really completely over it either.
In the rules, even though it's something you don't like, and you're hammering me. All right, Mr. $53.95.
So my item, it costs $66.42.
There's a category for that.
No, there's not. There's no category that covers $66.42. But I almost didn't put it on here because I was like, it is technically over $50. So
not technically over, actually over.
Well, it doesn't have to be, though, because it is possible to get the items needed for this in such a way that it will cost you less. If you just spend some time shopping around, if you get a little inventive, all completely 210% legal, you could spend $50 or less. And what I'm referring to is something that I covered on episode 92, which is how to build an affordable game table. So you can make your own game table for really cheap. And I've looked around online for how to create a 6x4 table, and it involves all sorts of crazy things, and you spend all sorts of money. Or if it doesn't, you just need to be able to saw, cut, drill, screw, whatever, like all sorts of stuff. And I'm not handy at all. This is something that just about anyone can do because it's really simple. You buy a folding table, and you buy some scraps of wood, you buy a sheet of plywood, and a little bit of screwing, not very much, drill it in, and you get the stuff on, and you're done. The schematics, there's full information at wargamingforums.com/WR92. Click on the show notes for that episode because it's covered in detail exactly what you have to do. But I did the pricing out and stuff, and it's $66.42. But really, you can get it for less because some of the pieces of wood are going to be cheaper. You can buy lower quality wood for some of the stuff, and that'll save you some money. Or you might have a coupon for some place or whatever. So it's possible to do it cheaper. And really, the biggest expense for this is what you buy for your table, for your folding table. So you can get basically whatever brand you want or whatever, as long as it's similar dimensions, and you'll be okay. But that's the folding table's $40, $45, and the rest of the stuff is next to nothing. So if you can save some money there, you're golden.
All right, since we're breaking the rules, I'm going to make an addendum to my under, for a $20 and under list, and I'm going to top you with the $20 folding gaming table. Well, it doesn't really fold. Go to any flea market in the world. Look for the most bedraggled person who absolutely doesn't want to be there. It's especially helpful if it's an outdoor flea market and it's raining. Whip out a $20 bill, offer to buy those two sawhorses and that old door from them for $20. Boom, instant table. Just take the doorknob out.
Do you know what? I've thought of that, except I want a different route. Sawhorses aren't high enough because to be comfortable for humans, you need to have a certain height, which tends to be about waist height if you're going to be standing, or just slightly lower if you're going to be sitting. So they sell really cool plastic sawhorses by Stanley, which are about $50 for a pair, I think, and each leg adjusts independent of the other.
Oh, there you go.
So it's perfect if you have to do like some actual like woodworking or whatever on stairs or something, but you can set whatever height you want. So I looked at that and I was like, I don't want to spend that much money. And you could use a door, except most doors are not flat enough and even enough so that you could get a purely great surface for rolling dice.
$5 of felt and a $2.95 level from the Target dollar bin area, you're good.
All you need is a special app for your phone or other mobile device.
There you go. Yeah.
And that does the leveling for you.
Yeah.
I tell you, my father looked at me like I had 9 heads when I pulled it up one day. I was like, look, Dad, I got a level. And he's like, what? Use a real level and be like a man.
All right. I'm going to get all crazy for my first $100 or more thing. This is something that clocks in actually at $100, but it was super unexpected for me because I found these at a place I did not expect to find them. And I'm actually going to make a recommendation to go there because I stumbled into a pretty cool deal as well. You do a lot of podcasts. I do a lot of podcasting. I listen to a lot of podcasts as well, and I especially listen to them on my commute to work. Part of my commute is a 2-mile walk, sort of through a wooded road area in the dark at about 5 in the morning. So I don't like having my headphones in. I usually keep one ear out, just in case. Well, my biggest fear is not people, it's skunks.
Coyote.
No, not even coyotes, skunks. I'm not worried for my safety, I just don't want to get sprayed. And we have a pretty thriving skunk population out here in the boonies. So I was in, of all places, I was in Office Depot, and they have these awesome, awesome Bluetooth-enabled headphones called Aftershocks, which aren't just Bluetooth-enabled headphones, but they're bone-conducting headphones. They use kind of like this military technology. They're $99. They're Aftershock Blues open ear headphones. The way you put them on is you put them on the bones just in front of your ears, so your ears are completely open, and they conduct the sound through your bones into your ear canals. So you can listen to stuff at a fairly decent volume and still hear everything that's going on around you. I can understand why some people would find that distracting. I love it for my commute because I am aware of my surroundings, but I'm you know, I can focus on what I'm listening to. It's also really pretty damn cool for taking phone calls on your phone. You got a smartphone, you got these Bluetooth-enabled headphones. There's no wire, too, which also I love for the winter because when it's 7 degrees out, my wires freeze, and I can't turn my head to the left or the right when I'm walking. That's a problem that I run into. So when I stumble into these things in Office Depot, they're $100. They're $99.99. And they had a deal for another Aftershocks thing that are not Bluetooth enabled. They don't have the little phone buttons on the ears that you can click to call people and hang up and do the volume and all that stuff. And they do have a wire, but they're $50 headphones, and you get them for free when you buy these things for $99.99. I don't know how long that deal is going on. I was just at Office Depot the other day, and it was still going on when I was there. So if this is the kind of gadget that sounds kind of exciting to you, it's $100. You're not going to go wrong. I think you can probably even find it online too. So I would definitely pop in and check it out. Again, not something I expected to find there. But damn, that's a pretty good deal. You're getting $150 worth of headphones for $100. So I got, you know, a little present for me and a present for somebody else all in one go.
Would that someone else be your wife, maybe?
No.
That's my wife, unfortunate.
Yeah, my wife isn't all that big into headphones. She doesn't really use them all that much unless I'm trying to sleep. And she has the iPad in bed next to me, and then she just has a pair that she uses. But if you're somebody that does a lot of talking on the phone, and you want something that is fairly comfortable, or if you like that bone conducting technology, which I just think is damn neat, because again, your ears are open, then you're going to want to check these things out. They're pretty cool.
Well, the first item on my $100 and above list doesn't have a price tag on it because it depends on what you choose for what you're going to pay. So the item is to book yourself into attending TotalCon.
Ah, yes.
In Mansfield, Massachusetts, February is school vacation week every year. Right now for TotalCon 2014, the room rates, which I believe are still available, are $94 a night. Mm-hmm. So depending on how many nights you want to stay and how many times you do room service or book stuff to your room, and then, of course, the cost of attending the con, which is free unless you want to play in anything, and then you have to buy tickets for that. So there's some variable nature going on. And then, of course, it depends on how many, you know, cocktails you want to have or drinks or whatever, and how many toys and stuff you buy while there. So this could become the most expensive item on my list, or it could not. So it depends on how you play it. But really, I've gone to not tons, but I've gone to several conventions, and I haven't been to one that I didn't like. But TotalCon is the one that I keep on finding myself talking about. I keep coming back to. It's the one that has connected me to perhaps more people than any other convention I've gone to. It's so much fun. I've covered it numerous times on the show, and I know I'm going to cover it again. And I've had Angela come on like a gazillion times. Mm-hmm. She's going to keep on coming back. So people can listen to – just go to WarGamingForums.com and type in TotalCon, and you'll find something. So I'm not going to talk too much about the con now, but really, if you've never been, you need to go. And if you've been, you need to go back.
Absolutely. This is going to be my fourth time going, my third year in a row. To sort of talk about one of my projects, my podcast, Indie Talks, just last episode 35, I had Angelia on there. She's the media director for Total Confusion. And she talked about everything it takes to put something like this together, as well as some information about the con itself. In episode 34, my first game school episode, I had three independent publishers on, probably folks that some of your listeners may have heard of. Peter Bryant does a lot of podcasting stuff. He's got the TriTac podcast. They have the Con Men podcast that they're rebranding. I have Jay Libby on, who does G-Core, which is the Phase Rip, the spiritual successor and the literal successor to the Phase Rip hero system, and he does a bunch of other awesome stuff. And James Carpio is on as well, and he has his own game studio, Chapter 13 Press, but he's also one of the managing editors for the new Gygax magazine and TSR. All of these people, and myself, and Jonathan, and a bunch of other really awesome people are going to be at this convention. And they bill it as the largest gaming convention in New England. Now, I know PAX East gets, I don't know, like 50,000, 45,000 people in it in one day. TotalCon gets about 1,200 people in one day, I think, is their biggest attendance. But TotalCon is 100% focused on playing games. You know, PAX East and things like that. There's a lot of cosplay going on. There's a lot of standing in line waiting for a 15-minute preview for video game and stuff like that. If your goal is to get in there, meet some awesome people, see some new games, see some publishers, catch some panels, and above all, play games, Total Confusion is where you want to go. Role-playing games, war games, board games, awesome, awesome stuff. All right, I'm done with that. So I've said my piece on that as well many times on Troll in the Corner. If you go to Troll in the Corner and search for TotalCon, me, Jonathan, a bunch of other things will pop up for the years that we've been going and the podcasts that we've done and the people we've interviewed. So I have a really, really emotional tie to my second one, and it actually ties in with your least favorite item on my list, Jonathan. And this is one that you can find at their store. I found it on Amazon. It is over $100. It's currently $245. It retails for about $350. But it could absolutely save and or change your life. And this is the Gerber Zombie Apocalypse Survival Kit. Now, Gerber is a knife and tool manufacturer, and this kit comes with not one, not two, three excellent knives, two machetes, a hatchet, survival webbing, and everything you're going to need to be quiet and survive in the zombie apocalypse. Can't go wrong with this thing. It's also Amazon Prime, so you order it tonight, and you're going to have it by Saturday. Well, this podcast isn't going to go until Monday. If you order it this afternoon, you're going to have it by Wednesday. This thing is, if you have somebody who is into the whole zombie genre, and I know it's getting a little overdone, but you know what, whatever. If you have somebody that likes weapons, if you have somebody that's into the whole zombie genre, and you want to get a product with my name on it that I have absolutely nothing to do with whatsoever, then go out and get the Gerber Zombie Apocalypse Survival Kit. You're not going to go wrong with this thing. It's awesome. I couldn't resist putting it on my list. I want one.
You've just described just about every single one of my friends.
See? I am in the right demographic. So, yeah, it's a little pricey, but yeah. So that's my number two. Top that, Reinhardt.
Well, my number two, it also does not have a price point on it. You can tell that I have a hard time with things that are expensive, because most things that I think are awesome, unless it's like a computer or something, they don't cost a lot. But this is something that gives flexibility to the gift giver. Because what it is, it's not just giving something of monetary value. It's giving an experience. It's creating, as Ben Affleck said in Chasing Amy, a moment. And what it is it allows you to give the gift to the gamer in your life of a once-in-a-lifetime shopping spree at their favorite game store. We've talked about numerous items on our respective lists, and a lot of them have been things that you can find probably cheaper online. And while that's awesome, I love saving money, it's really important to remember the fantastic local stores, the independent whoever's, who without them, our communities would be a vast wasteland full of zombies. And as awesome as that would be, it would get boring after a while, because zombies would prevent you from going anywhere. So in order to keep the zombie apocalypse at bay, you have to support those brick-and-mortar independent game stores. So here in Massachusetts, in Eastern Mass, I have several that I want to highlight that I think would be perfect for a shopping spree for any gamer, wargamer, or tabletop gaming enthusiast in your life. You have Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington and Plainville. You have Hobby Bunker in Malden. And then you have The Wiz on Route 9 East in Westboro. So no matter whether you're in the city, you're just outside the city, you're going down the Cape for a vacation, you're coming back, or maybe you're heading out to Worcester to see a show or something, you can stop at any one of these. They each have their specialties. Some are more RPGs, some are more cards, some are more historical, but they all have a nice blend of product. And the number one reason to shop at them isn't that they're independent, it isn't that they're awesome, which they are, but it's because the people who work there and who run there provide exceptional customer service. Yep. You will not find customer service like that anywhere else, and that alone makes it the reason to go there. So you can do a shopping spree in any price point that you want for the gamer in your life. You could do it for $100. You could do it for a buck. I mean, you could do it for millions of dollars. Whatever you can do and you want to do, and I'm sure these independent game stores would really appreciate the business. But more than that, it really is an experience. You're going to build relationships between you and the gamer, and between you and the gamer in the game store. Mm-hmm. And that is a very, very important relationship for any gamer.
Yeah, the only one that I've been to is The Wiz on Route 9, and in their old and their new location, and they're really cool. But you bring up a really good point about the local game store. If you know exactly what you want to get, your best bet, in my opinion, is to go online and grab it. But if you need a place to game, if you want to find other people who are into the same thing that you are, or if you need some suggestions, if you know you like this game but you don't know what else is out there, go to your store and ask, because these people are literally living this thing. You know what I mean? That's their livelihood. They are making money and trying to stay alive by knowing as much about games as they possibly can. And in most cases, there are the oddball stores that aren't very friendly, but everyone that you've named, I'm sure, they're awesome. You can walk in and ask a question from the stupid to the esoteric, and they are happy to answer. And they have really good ideas. They're really experienced. If they don't know something, somebody else on their staff usually does. And if that's not the case, they'll find an answer for you and get back to you. So use your game stores, your friendly local game stores, as a resource for going in and saying, I like X-Wing, can you tell me what else I might like? Or, you know, hey, I really like Dominion. What's another good deck builder? Or I'm really wanting to get into Euro games, and I tried this Waterdeep thing. It's awesome. What's next? And they'll tell you, and they'll be honest about it, too. So, yeah, absolutely.
I once talked with some of the hosts of another gaming podcast called WWPD, What Would Patton Do? Because I was confused why they routinely talked about playing games at home. And so I said, well, why don't you play it a local game store? Do you not have any near you? Oh, no, we have several. And they live in the Virginia, Richmond kind of area. And they just happened to say that they had some less than positive experiences and that the game stores really weren't that good. And because, and when I say not that good, I don't mean product-wise. I'm talking customer service and customer interactions. Not everyone's cut out for that. But because there were issues there, they chose to not do business there, to not shop there, to not play there. And so, of course, if you have a bad game store, if you're not getting the respect that you are due, if they're not treating you right or other people right, don't give them your money. Don't go there. Don't support absolutely. That kind of madness. But if you have a good place to shop, you need to go there. When I do any sort of playtesting for an event, for a convention such as, say, a TotalCon, for example, some of it now happens at home because have the game table set up in Wargaming Recon Central, but also we go to local game stores to play test because it gives us the chance to play. It gives us the chance to see if maybe we can rope some other people in to get the input, but then we're able to see what other products are out there so we can talk to the game store employees, we can see what's going on, get the 411, keep our fingers on the pulse, but also it allows us to see what's new and shiny and maybe spend some of our hard-earned cash.
So absolutely.
It's a fun thing to do. It's more of, think of game store not just as place to shop, but as place to be, as community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I second that. All right, I'm going to go totally off the gaming ropes again with my last over $100 thing. I was lucky enough to get an iPad through my job, and I use this far more at home than I do at work. And I use it for games, I use it for books, my wife streams Netflix on it, my kids have apps on it, there's the Khan Academy, there's all kinds of stuff that you can do with a tablet. However, iPads are freaking expensive. So I'm always on the lookout for tablets that are inexpensive that don't suck. Because you can find a lot of inexpensive, you know, $99, $70 Android tablets out there, but they're not going to give you a lot of bang for your buck. One of the things that I've been sort of lusting after, because I could really use like a family tablet, is the Kindle Fire HD 7-inch. Thing came out not that long ago. It's a nice small tablet. It's about the size of the iPad mini. It's got a 1.5 gigahertz dual processor. You can get it with 8 gigs or 16 gigs of storage. It's cheap. If you don't mind ads on your opening screen, it's like $140. If you don't want the ads, bump up to $20 to $160, and you're getting yourself a fairly decent Android-based tablet. Of course, you're locked into Amazon's kind of thing, but as a family guy, it has things on there that I think are awesome. Like, I could lock it out so that my kids get 20 minutes of gameplay time, but unlimited reading time. You know, everybody has their own profile on there, so you could have your own sort of stuff. And it's, you know, on average, about $120 cheaper than a comparable iPad. You do have the problem of having less board game apps for it, because most board game apps come out for iOS first, but as something to just check your email, surf the web, play some games, and of course read books, as it's coming from Amazon, I feel like you can't go wrong for $160 for an ad-free tablet that is going to get, you know, years worth of support and actually be some decent hardware. So that's my last pick. It's fairly generic. It is fairly geeky. I do love the gadgets. It's probably not something I'm going to get, just because, you know, $140, That goes into a lot of Legos and stuff for the kids. But if I were to make a dream list, that would certainly be on it, because our family could actually use another tablet. There are times when we want to have more than one person online at one time doing something. So that ends the list for me.
I think that's a good choice. Last year I had the iPad mini for the Holiday Gift Guide 2012, and at the time it was $329, I think. My dad actually got one for birthday or Christmas or whatever, and he loved it. And I think the smaller – we have a Gen 1 iPad and love the first-gen iPad, and I know they've made advancements. But one of the things that I disliked about the iPad is its size. It's too big, really, for what it does. If you try reading – like, I'll read in bed at night, and I have that, and I have a Nook Color.
Yep.
And if I'm using the iPad, and even if I'm laying on my side and I'm reading and I have the thing, like, my arm gets tired.
Yeah.
And my arm's being propped up on the bed and a pillow or something, and, you know, and it doesn't seem like it's that heavy, but over time, even if you're just sitting down, it's on your lap, the weight adds up. So something smaller, like the Kindle tablet that you're talking about, or an iPad mini or whatever, it's small enough that you don't have to worry so much about the weight, but it's large enough that allows for better tech specs on it, and for you to still do stuff and feel substantial enough that you're not just using, like, a phone
or
whatever.
Yeah. And, I mean, for a family tablet, for something that you're going to get, it's not going to be a power horse, obviously, but for $140 or $160 bucks, you really can't go wrong with that. You know, that's really inexpensive for a fairly decent tablet.
My final item on my list cost $138.15.
Exactly.
Exactly, actually. Well, tax, of course, and maybe shipping. But MSRP of $138.15, I believe. And what it is it's a special Dremel 4000 650 120 volt variable speed rotary kit. And this is just kind of is a capstone for the theme for my list, which I guess is really do-it-yourself, terrain making, just assemblage kind of stuff.
Right.
Because this isn't, I think just about everyone knows what a Dremel is. It's a sander, it does polishing or whatever, really handy for some minimal things. Like, let's say you have to put together one of those Warhammer models that has the stuff, and maybe some pieces are really thin, so to strengthen it, you got to drill out some holes, and you have to do pinning, so you put in some paper clips or whatever. All right, this allows you to do that, but whatever you do, don't do like I did many years ago when I drilled through my thumb. That was painful, and so be careful, people, is a motto here. But this particular set, it has all sorts of extra features and add-ons to it. It's one of the higher-priced Dremels out there. It has a stronger motor, and just all the accessories, really. So it allows you to do more stuff, not just sanding and that kind of stuff. Just about anything you need to do, you could do with this. For any sort of craft project.
Nice.
And like I talked about making a game table and doing some of the other stuff, you could use this to do some of that other stuff without pulling out like a real bigger, heavier, more expensive tool.
Right.
So it's something you can keep around the house. It's easy enough that just about anyone can use. You just beware of safety, read the instructions, and be mindful where you put your hands. But just about anyone can do it. And let's say you have some older kids who want to get more involved with this kind of stuff. It's something with parental supervision that they can handle. They can't really handle a gigantic saw or a gigantic drill or whatever. But something like this, if they're careful, they can. So I think it's a nice multi-generational sort of thing that just kind of blends in with all sorts of stuff on my list.
That's
like
awesome.
I said, it's $138.15. You can get it online, get it at your local hardware store or wherever. And Dremel is just, it's a good brand, and it's going to last you a lifetime. And it's worth the extra money because of all that extra stuff you get. And I'm not a handy person in the least, but I feel like everyone needs to have something like this in there.
Some kind of tools. Just please do not use it to modify your tablets.
No. Not at all.
No.
And maybe even more importantly, make sure you don't use it to modify your people in your life, your gamers
your
or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, the... I tell you, it hurt like heck.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I was like, so I got a hole in my thumb, and I was surprisingly calm about it. I don't know if I was in shock or what it was, because normally I'd be like, oh my God, what did I do to my thumb? But I was like, hey, I need a Band-Aid or something.
Nice. So good list.
Yeah, I love doing the people love lists, so but I love doing the holiday gift guide list because I love the holidays. I love December. Really, is what it is. It's one of the reasons why I take almost all of December off. My birthday's in December.
Oh,
so many
birthday.
Holidays, and that actually reminds me. I should remind listeners really because I mentioned on the episode prior that you should be aware of the upcoming schedule for Wargaming Recon. So we're gonna have the next episode, episode 105, War Games Holiday Center. It's going to have John and Diane Sutherland as special guests, which I mentioned when talked about Mega War Games, one of my items on the list. And that's going to release on December 9th, 2013. Very important to remember the date, December 9th, 2013. And the reason why is that basically from the time that releases all the way until, oh, geez, January 20th is what it is, I will be on break. The show will be on hiatus. We'll take the time to, I don't know, catch up on the backlog, do some gaming products or whatever. And then on January 20th, episode 106 will be returning, and you'll be able to listen to that. But in the meantime, there will be no me, really. I'll be gone. Think of me on, I don't know, on sabbatical or something. So we get that coming up, and then we have some really cool guests coming up for 2014. We have Dean Emerson, an organizer for the Historical Wargaming Convention, Huzzah, in Portland, Maine. And then we got Stephen McLaughlin, who I've alluded to earlier. He is the new digital content manager for Battlefront. And then we have Angela, who's going to be coming on. She's the promotional director for New England's largest gaming convention, TotalCon, in Mansfield, Mass. And then there's going to be a variety of new guests and previous friends who's going to be joining the show in the 2014 recording year. So those are just all things to be mindful of as this episode draws its way to a close. But, Ben, it's always so much fun to just get together and chat with you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So, of course, if you're interested in any of the items on the list, you want to head over to the show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR104, wargamingforums.com/WR104, and Ben's list will be on there, and my list will be on there, and there'll be links to all the items, so you can find stuff. But, well, maybe not all the items, because really, I can't give you a link to a shopping spree,
right,
but I could link you to the game stores, so you can find out how to do
there
that sort of stuff. So you can find out more about all that sort of stuff, and don't forget, check out Ben's show, Indie Talks. And Ben, how about you tell the nice people how they can find you and some of the other cool stuff you do?
Sure. Well, I run Troll in the Corner, the website that we both write for and are editors on, and that's a tabletop gaming site. We do all kinds of tabletop stuff. I have the Indie Talks podcast, where I talk to independent folks who make their own way in the gaming world and gaming-related stuff, anything from publishing their own games to working with big publishers to making movies about games, whatever it is. I'll no subject is too big for me to tackle. You can also find me on Google Plus as Ben Gerber. You can find me on Twitter as @TrollITC. You can find me on Facebook as myself. And you can find my products on DriveThruRPG. I've got about 35 RPG products up there, ranging from $0 to pay whatever the hell you want. And you can also find some of my products at The Game Crafter, where you can buy yourself a copy of Ninja, Silent But Deadly, or my new game, Fools. And look for some more stuff coming out from me over the course of the next year. I have 4 or 5 games that I'm hoping to get out. Hopefully some not published by myself, but by other publishers.
So let's back up a sec. If people want to find you, they go to Facebook and they type in myself, M-Y-S-E-L-F?
Yes, that'll get them right to me.
I thought so. Okay, just wanted to verify that. You are someone who's very well connected. People can get you in many different ways. That's good.
Yes. Yes. Time consuming, but good.
Sometimes I have guests on, and I'll say, so, how about you tell us how we can find you? Well, I have an email address, and I mean, that's great, but not everyone is as into the social media.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, and I almost forgot. I did mention our site, Troll in the Corner, but to get to us, it's trollitc.com. That's my home base.
And it's a good home base indeed. Mm. Well, thank you again, Ben, for being on. I'm sure you'll be back sometime in the
not-too-distant
future. Because, I mean, we have to continue talking about how awesome Star Wars is and how wrong you are about The Walking Dead.
Yeah, well, when The Walking Dead miniature game comes out, we'll see.
You know what? I'll have to leave that up to you to buy, because that's one I'm not touching. Unless it's based off the graphic novels, because those are awesome. Well, anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening to the show, and I hope you'll find this to be useful for shopping for the gamer in your life, because it's not always easy, especially if you're a non-gamer. You're like, what the heck do I buy them? They keep on talking about these polyhedrons and rolling them, and it does something, and I don't know. So maybe this will give you some insight into the world of a strange individuals, the gamer. And thank you again, Ben. It's a great list.
Oh, my pleasure.
Even Walking Dead included, great list.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you very much. And as always, everyone knows the deal. You have to. You got it. You need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.